Trump versus the judges, or is it more accurate to say politicians versus the judges? We'll talk about who's actually at fault. Also, there's a bill in Maryland to end all current and stop any future 287G programs. We'll talk about who that really helps and if it helps anyone. And then finally, a Democrat is telling the truth about COVID. Will others follow? We'll talk about all of that and more on Straight Talk with Europe C. Morgan. Donald Trump is going after the judges and our Constitution is going to crumble, or so I hear. Here's the thing, though. I feel like I've heard this story before, except that it wasn't Donald Trump. It was Joe Biden, and it wasn't our Constitution. It was, don't worry about it. It needs to happen. All right, here's what's going on. So just recently, the Trump administration sent over 100 suspected gang members from Venezuela to a prison in El Salvador, where they're not likely to see the sun again for a long time. And this was apparently in direct order, or could have been in direct contradiction to an order by Judge Boasberg, who had blocked the administration from using the Alien Enemies Act to try to remove these aliens. So now there are all kinds of calls on the right to impeach this judge, that the judiciary has just gone haywire. And then on the left, oh my gosh, Donald Trump is going after the judges again. And our entire way of life, our Constitution is just going to crumble. So which is it? I'll tell you, it's both and neither. I know. That is the most lawyer answer I can give you, but it is also the truth. So let me explain what happened. Donald Trump, right, so I think we can all agree that this particular gang, this Venezuelan gang, is incredibly brutal and violent. It is absolutely ruthless, and they don't particularly care who you are. I'm not going to go into details in how they conduct their murders, but I can tell you that it is absolutely inhumane what they do to human beings. So these are not people that any of us want to defend. So what's going on? The Trump administration has attempted to use something called the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. I tell you the date because I want you to know how old this thing is, okay? This was not something that the Trump administration just, you know, poof, thought of just recently. 1798. It's been out for centuries. It gives the president very broad authority to remove foreign nationals during wartime. I believe it's been used 3 times in our nation's history. And so the Trump administration is saying that we are under attack from these incredibly violent gangs, and so we're going to use this act to get them out of here. So they rounded up over 100 of these suspected gang members. Now, the issue has to do with due process, you know, whether or not, like, one, can the Trump administration actually use this particular act? Because, again, it's during wartime. It's there are a lot of details, so part of the hesitation from the judges has been, well, does this count? Can you use this? And so in legal terms, what ends up happening is that, you know, one side argues, yes, we can, you know, and the other side says, no, you can't. And so you have a hearing where the judge will say, all right, tell me why you can. All right, tell me why they can't. And then the judge will then make their ruling. So that's typically how these things happen when it's not so emotionally charged. So last Saturday, Judge Boasberg actually blocked the administration from using the act during a hearing, and he ordered 2 of the flights to turn around and come back to the U.S. However, apparently, during or after or sometime around the time of that hearing, the planes were in the air. They did not come back. And so the judge is now wondering, he's not just wondering, he is demanding to know, did the administration simply ignore his order? Because I can tell you, as an attorney, and I was reading some of the transcript on this, I was terrified for this poor government attorney who had to go in front of this judge and answer the questions about whether or not the administration just flat out ignored him. You know, I've been practicing for more than a decade now, and I can tell you I would not have slept well the night before. Knowing I was about to walk in basically get my rear end handed to me by a judge. So the issue is whether or not, you know, the Trump administration just ignored them. So that's kind of the legal side of this. Then there is the political side of this discussion, which I think is where the media is headed. Not, you know, whether or not what the Trump administration was doing was legal. But what about all those calls to now impeach this judge? And this is just the Trump administration, you know, trying to become more powerful than our judiciary system. At this point, I think I actually find a little bit of balance in what Trump is doing. Now, I know that sounds crazy, but the reason I find balance in it is because it's the exact same thing that Democrats do. Listen to this from Fox News.
Heard AOC call for the impeachment of Alito. We heard President Biden say that he was going to move forward with the eviction moratorium, even though he didn't know it was unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. Now it seems that the Trump White House, they're talking about defiance, talking about impeachments. They're trying to force Justice Roberts' hands because they want this to be ruled in their direction, and they also want an end to these injunctions. And they think that this is the only area where Democrats can stand up to them.
See why I mean there's balance? That was Philip Wegman from Real Clear Politics. He's a White House correspondent. He was on Fox News talking about, both sides actually do this. I think I might be more concerned if it was just one side that was going after the judiciary. That would become less of a balance, I guess. But I just want to put us all on pause because, as an attorney, as a member of the bar, I think it's wrong when both sides do this. If our Constitution crumbles, it's not going to be because one side did X and it's going to be because both sides. It's going to be because our judicial system and our Constitution is being attacked by both sides, Republicans and Democrats. And we should all be equally frustrated and upset when that happens. Now, think back. It wasn't too long ago when Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wanted to impeach Supreme Court Justices Alito and Thomas.
I rise today to introduce articles of impeachment against Associate Justices of the Supreme Court Clarence Thomas and Samuel Anthony Alito Jr.
So one minute we have AOC saying, let's impeach these Supreme Court justices. And then in the next minute we have Donald Trump's administration saying, we should impeach this federal judge. Okay, get in line, because it sounds like both of you are trying to do the exact same thing. Now, the issue is that a lot of times in the media, that's not how it's discussed. And that is a problem because most Americans then don't realize that it's not just one side that's going after the judiciary. It is both sides. And we should be equally concerned when either side, and they seem to kind of like just ping pong this back and forth, goes after one of the branches of government. We don't have equal branches of government when we allow one to be attacked by either side. Now think about it. Not so long ago, Senator Ron Wyden, who is a Democrat from Oregon, this was during the abortion discussion, right? And here's actually where I think that a lot of the problem lies, is that when it comes to our friends on the left, there seems to be this kind of moral hierarchy that, well, the ends justify the means, right? If we got to burn the place down to do X, Y, and Z, then let's burn the place down. And that's a problem because I thought we didn't want to burn the place down, right? We end up homeless if we burn the place down. So this abortion debate was going on, if you remember, and there was, I believe it was in Texas, that a judge had ruled the mifepristone, I believe, it's the abortion pill, that had ruled against that abortion pill. And Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat from Oregon, said that President Biden should just ignore it. Just ignore it because the ends justify the means, right? Women need that. It needs to be accessible. And so because of that end, the pill needs to be accessible to women, then it should be okay for the president to just simply ignore a judge's ruling. What's the problem with that? So it's just going to be, if you decide that it's important enough, then we can ignore what a judge says. If that's the standard, then we are already in huge trouble. If you remember President Biden during COVID issued this moratorium, this rent moratorium and the student loan forgiveness, right? And even Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, Democrat Speaker of the House, said, no, the president cannot forgive student loans. These are things that Congress has to do. It can't be the president. And yet he tried to do it anyways, in direct contradiction to what the law says, to what our Constitution says. But it was totally fine at the time. Why? Because the ends justify the means. Because in the end, we wanted to give student loan forgiveness, and you wanted to allow people to not pay their mortgage or their rent. And so whatever way you had to do it was fine. There's a word for it. It's called hypocrisy, and both sides seem to be very fond of it. No, I don't think that it's correct for President Trump or anyone to say that we're just going to simply try to impeach a judge because we don't like what they say or we don't like how they rule. There's actually a lot of flexibility in rulings. Let me just give you a quick example. In Maryland, if you get a DUI, your first DUI, you can actually get up to a year in jail, and I think the fine is now $1,200. I've had plenty of clients, you know, that go in front of a judge. It's their first time. They've never been in trouble before. You know, maybe they're a school teacher or whatever, you know, but they generally have a pretty good background. Could they get a maximum of 1 year in jail? Yeah, they definitely could. Do they often get that? No, they don't. But I can tell you as an attorney, sometimes I walk into a courtroom and in, like, I'll just give you an example, like in Annapolis, there are, I think there's five courtrooms. And so there could be up to five different judges. And occasionally, like, you know, I'll walk in and I'm like, ooh, this judge is really tough. We don't want to be in front of this judge because that 1 year to, like, you can basically give you probation or, you know, up to a year in jail, like, this judge is going to give you a really hard time. So maybe we will ask for a postponement. Maybe we'll pray a jury trial to get you out from under this judge. But maybe you go then go to a different judge after you request your postponement and you get a probation or you get, you know, some, you get a much more lenient sentence or a better sentence, right? Given the circumstances. That happens, but they are still under the same restrictions, so they are still, you know, facing the same code, the same regulation that says you could still face a maximum of 1 year in jail. Sometimes I think when this happens at the federal level and you throw in politics and you throw in the media, that judicial discretion is ignored and instead it's turned into political discretion. Now, I'm not saying that these judges don't have political views. Of course they do. I mean, of course, they have some political views, but a lot of their decision making can be justified legally instead of always relying on it politically. Now, we could have that discussion, right, about this judge's decision and whether or not it was the right or the wrong decision. That's fine. You know, there's an appeals process as well, but we don't want to do that. Instead, we have these political discussions, and when it's our side doing it, we forget that this is an issue on both sides. So I just want everybody to remember, as this discussion continues, and again, I feel for the government attorneys who are having to go before this judge and explain the actions, but before we start thinking that our Constitution, our government is going to crumble because the other side did so-and-so or other side did whatever, you know, just keep in mind that this happens on both sides. And if it does crumble, it's going to be because it was attacked by both Republicans and Democrats. Hi, this is Eurypsy Morgan. You may remember me from my radio show or my legal commentary on local news. Politics has gotten crazy, and sometimes you just need a little straight talk. Make sure to like and subscribe on this video here on YouTube at Y Morgan Show, and look for us on Spotify and iTunes shortly. The end of the legislative session cannot come fast enough here in Maryland. It's only 90 days, but sometimes I feel like it goes on for years. And in their latest attempt at legislation, Democrats are going to make everyone less safe, including immigrants. So Delegate Nicole Jones, a Democrat from Prince George's County, is sponsoring this bill that would end current 287G programs in the state and also prevent future partnerships through the 287G program. So what is it? As we know, federal law or immigration is federal law, which means that it can only be enforced by federal actors. So your local police department cannot enforce immigration law because it is immigration law at the federal level and they are local actors. So is there any potential for partnership? Of course. The 287G program allows ICE or allows the feds to come in and train and deputize just a small amount, certain folks in the local law enforcement that would then allow when a person is arrested. So that is a big part about this, right? And it is so often missed. When a person is arrested, if you have a county that has a partnership with 287G, let's say I am driving around like a maniac, right? I get a DUI. And so I am then arrested. I'm taken to jail. And then there is a process, an intake process. If that county is part of the 287G program, then you will get, your name will get run through a database and ICE will be notified and we'll figure out if there is any type of ICE detainer against that person, right? And this would happen to any person who has already been arrested, not to a random person walking down the street speaking Spanish. This is someone who has then who has been arrested. So now they are in the judicial system, right? They're in the prison, the jail system. So that's basically the 287G program. It allows local actors to be deputized and have a partnership with ICE or with the federal government in enforcing immigration law. I say that little rundown because every time that I hear, particularly the Democrats in the legislature talking about this, I wonder if they have actually spoken to anyone about how the program actually works. There seem to be a lot of rumors and a lot of misconceptions and not a lot of fact with how this program works. And because there is a lot of rumor, guess what happens? There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear about how this affects individuals. Now, as someone who practices a lot of criminal defense, yes, I have had clients who have been put in this situation. I've had clients who were arrested and jailed. I'll just give you a quick example. I had someone who got 10 days in jail, and one of his major concerns is whether or not ICE would come pick him up. And I said to him, I was like, listen, there is a pretty good possibility. What's going to happen when he goes to jail, his name will get run through a system because the county in which he was arrested and jailed has a 287G component. And so when he goes to jail, his name will get run through the database, and then ICE will be notified, and they will then have an opportunity to pick him up within a certain time if they choose to do so. Now, here's the other thing. If they choose to do so, so it's not a guarantee. And I can tell you, ICE has a big presence in people's minds. It does not have a massive presence physically. There are only so many ICE agents. There are only so many DHS agents. And that's part of the reason that this program was allowed, so that we can fill in that local and federal gap, right? ICE can't be everywhere, regardless of what the media is telling you. They cannot be everywhere. And in a way, this actually helps keep everyone a lot safer. So one of the most frustrating aspects of the 287G program, as I said, is not how it works. It's its reputation. It's how it is perceived and how that perception leads to terrible legislation. So one, the 287G program is voluntary, all right? So these counties individually can say, yes, I will work with ICE, or no, we won't work with ICE. In Maryland right now, I think that there are three counties. It's Cecil, Frederick, and Harford counties that have a 287G program. Carroll and Washington counties are pending. Now, here's the thing. Anne Arundel County says that they don't. I can tell you that they may not have a formal agreement with 287 with the federal government in terms of 287G, but they do work with ICE. I have had clients in the last couple of months who have faced ICE detainers, and there does seem to be a lot more partnership than I think the current Democrat administration is willing to say publicly. But I think part of what is so frustrating about this are the misconceptions about how 287G works. If you listen to the media, they're going to tell you, and particularly our friends on the left in the legislature, they're going to tell you that ICE is at around every corner, that if you are walking down the street speaking Spanish, next thing you know, you're going to be put on a plane and taken to El Salvador. That's not how it works. And I can say that as somebody who does regularly walk down the street speaking Spanish to my children. I am Hispanic. One of the biggest misconceptions, I think, is that people think that they're just going to be, they're everywhere. But again, that's why the 287G program was created, because they can't be everywhere. And this applies to people who are already incarcerated, right? So it doesn't matter if you're in this country illegally, undocumented, however you want to say, this program will not apply to you unless you are taken into custody. And then at that point, yes, if you are in a county where they have this type of partnership, then yes, they will run your name through a database. But again, there may not be an ICE detainer, or ICE may decide that this is not a priority individual. This is not a high priority individual. The ICE director, Matthew Elston, for the state of Maryland, has said numerous times on numerous different news platforms that they simply do not have the manpower. And so they are prioritizing the people who have existing violent criminal records, right? Violent is a big part of this. But unfortunately, the folks in the legislature don't seem to understand that. And here's what else really bugs me about this topic, that they hide behind the immigrant community and say that this is going to harm the immigrant community, that they're not going to want to work with the police department, that this is going to somehow be, you know, hugely detrimental. Let me tell you something. When it comes to a lot of the immigrant community, even in Maryland, but probably I would say most of the country, they didn't come here, a lot of them, because of the weather. Most of them came because the risk that it took to come to America was worth it to leave what they left behind. And when I say that, I mean, if we really take a look at countries like Guatemala, Honduras, Venezuela, and the poverty and the violence that is the norm in a lot of these countries, they left that. What ends up happening when Democrats, and I say Democrats because this is a particular problem on the left, the refusal to separate the good people from the bad people. And there should be no hesitation in saying there are some very, very bad people, very bad gang members who do all kinds of evil and terrible things. Even in Anne Arundel County, there was recently a story about two individuals, I believe, who it was recently suspected that their deaths, which occurred several years ago, were related to MS-13. And there was just a little line about how they were killed. They were hacked to death with machetes. This is not a group of people. These gangs are not, you know, they're not just there for camaraderie or, you know, partnership. These are violent individuals who do incredibly cruel things. And so you have people who are willing to give everything and anything for an opportunity. They come here to America. Guess who else comes here? Those gang members. A lot of those gang members then follow. Guess where those gang members hang out? They're not hanging out at Target. They're not hanging out at the local Safeway. They are oftentimes hanging out at the places where these immigrant communities gather, right? Where they are more likely to encounter the same types of people that they would have back home. And so a program like 287G that applies to people who are incarcerated is more likely to pick up gang members than it is your ordinary person who is just walking down the street speaking Spanish, all right? So it actually is helpful and does help make the community safer by providing an avenue for those people to be flagged. Without a program like this, you could have somebody who is a suspected gang member just fall through the cracks. And it happens a lot. I have seen it happen. But in counties where the 287G program is active and it's effective, one of those suspected gang members, and you know, we'll say suspected, but let's just call him a gang member, gets a DUI or gets arrested for an assault. And then ICE is notified. If ICE wasn't notified, they would go through the judicial system, but they would only face local enforcement. That's it, not federal enforcement. Federal enforcement is what allows them to get them out of here. We do not want MS-13. We do not want these Venezuelan gangs. We don't want any of these gangs in our country. And the 287G program allows local law enforcement in certain instances to partner with the federal government and get those people out of the community. And like I said, the people that they tend to terrorize the most are other Hispanics, other people who look like them, other immigrants in very vulnerable communities. So I would think it would be incredibly helpful if instead of trying to scare everyone or instead of trying to figure out ways to end this program, delegates like Nicole Williams or anyone else who's interested in getting rid of the 287G program, if they would actually take the time to understand how this program works and take the time to understand how it actually makes communities, including immigrant communities, a lot safer. Now, I get that that's not the politically expedient thing to do, but it is the best thing to do. As if you don't already have enough on your plate, I have one more thing for you. It's a book recommendation. So this is on one of my favorite books about Abraham Lincoln. I feel like I've read a ton of them. It's only about 100 pages long, and it's about Abraham Lincoln, the attorney, not Abraham Lincoln, the president. It's very, very interesting. I highly, highly recommend that you read this. So make sure to like and subscribe to this video on YouTube at Y Morgan Show, and look for us on Spotify and iTunes shortly. The other day, I was overhearing a conversation between my two kids, and my 8-year-old was saying how she misses kindergarten. She's in second grade now, and they have spelling tests, and she just hates it. And my 10-year-old turned to her and said something about, like, I don't think I liked kindergarten. It was pretty boring. And then I remembered, of course it was boring for her, because she spent most of her kindergarten year in front of a computer doing kindergarten online, because Maryland was the last state in the nation to reopen schools during COVID, right? Every other state in the nation had figured it out except for Maryland. Absolutely refused to do it. So we had a bunch of 5-year-olds trying to do kindergarten online. Most of them couldn't even spell their own names, but it was an absolute disaster. I don't think I've gotten over it. I don't think a lot of kids have gotten over it, but I'll tell you this. As I was doing research for this show, I came across this story, and it was in Time Magazine, and it was about a Democrat, Representative Jake Auchincloss, I think I said his name right, 37 years old, Democrat out of Massachusetts. Now, he's in a very, very safe Democrat state, not just state, but district. I believe he didn't even have a Republican challenger. So I guess one of the things about being in a safe district is that you can say what you really want. You can say what you really think, because there's really not a chance that you're going to lose. And I appreciate, I mean, if he wasn't, I would hug him for his response to this question that was posed by this Time reporter. They asked him, what went wrong for Democrats and how can it be fixed? And here's what he said. He said, it's encapsulated in the school closures. The school closures were a catastrophe. There are elementary kids who didn't learn reading and writing because it was on Zoom. That there's high school kids who missed out on baseball practice. There's college kids who didn't get to enjoy the college experience. And what defined those school closures was a condescension. It was an inflexibility, and it was a resistance to feedback about the effects of our government's decisions. He said it was this toxic confluence of smugness with inflexibility and, frankly, poor governance. Can I tell you that I am so happy to hear that. I am so happy to read that. I might print that out somewhere and put it on my wall. I have been so frustrated over the last 5 years because of this refusal to admit what happened. And it's not just for the point to be able to say, you know, like, haha, I told you so. It's not that. Think about this. If you are in a relationship and say like your boyfriend or girlfriend or your spouse cheated, right? And whatever reason you guys decide you were going to stay together, but there has never been an acknowledgement of why it happened or that the other person was wrong, right? In order for people to move on in those types of situations, it takes the other party, the one who committed, right, the adultery, to say, I was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. I'm sorry. Let's figure out why this happened so it doesn't happen again. And I think for me, that has always been my biggest fear. If there is a refusal to acknowledge what happened, then it could happen again. And to me, that has been, I think, the most frightening thing over the last 5 years. Watching my 5-year-old, my then 5-year-old, try to have a kindergarten class, try to learn anything online, that's not something that just stayed in 2020. That has progressed. Now we're in 2025. These kids are in the fourth grade. And I can tell you that these kids are not complete. There are a lot of missing pieces to this current fourth grade class. A lot of them, yes, they still have not learned how to read adequately. They are behind in math, a lot of them. And a lot of it has to do with the lack, the building blocks that they missed out on. So there's the educational component, but then there is also the emotional component. Do you remember what we did to these kids? We told them they could not hug their grandparents because they might give them COVID and they would die. To a 5-year-old, to a 4-year-old. Remember, we had them wearing masks and we told them that they had to wear a mask so that they didn't kill their bus driver or their school teacher. These things had deep-rooted impacts on our children. And as a parent, I am not ready until there is an acknowledgement of what was wrong and how we are going to make sure that this doesn't happen again. I have not been ready to just sweep it under the rug, let bygones be bygones. Absolutely not. I need an acknowledgement of what went wrong and how we will not allow this to happen again. So to Representative Auchincloss, thank you. Thank you for finally saying out loud what so many people have wanted. This Times article needs to be everywhere. And think about what he said here. What defined the school closures, as he says, it wasn't science, right? My undergrad is in biology, and there was nothing more frustrating than during COVID time being told that we have to believe the science. Do you know what we do with science? We question. That's how science works. You propose an experiment, you conduct the experiment, then you question the results of that experiment. And then you do the whole thing all over again. That's how we learn. You are encouraged. You are supposed to ask questions. That's the entire peer review process of an experiment, is that you did this, you created this experiment, it's great. Now we're going to ask your peers to tear it apart to make sure that the results were actually what we thought they were, to recreate it, right? To follow your steps, to make sure that everything is as it should be, right? And you are encouraged to ask questions. During COVID, we were told to follow the science, and we changed the definition of science to be follow what we say and do not question anything. That is not science. That is, as he says, it was condescension. It was inflexibility. As he says, what defined the school closures was condescension. I was on air full time during that time period, and I can't tell you how many times I was told that I was advocating for people's deaths because I wanted to know where the 6-foot rule came from. Remember that? We had to, I recently walked into a CVS and they, God bless them, they put down those stickers, the 6 feet away stickers, you know, and they must have done it with some sort of permanent whatever, because that stuff is not coming up. But I wanted to know where that came from. Who decided 6 feet? Why did we say 6 feet? Do you know what came out later? That it was an arbitrary number, that was not something that was scientifically based to say, oh, well, at 6 feet, X, Y, and Z happens. It was a lot of suspicions, thoughts, some concerns, but there was no real hard evidence to say 6 feet is where we needed to be. Meanwhile, in some instances, we chose not to reopen classes because our decision to reopen class depended, hinged on that 6-foot rule. Oh, well, we can't fit enough desks in here because everybody has to be separated by 6 feet. And therefore, your child's life is going to be upended because now they have to do kindergarten online, because now they can't come back for their senior year, because now they can't start their freshman year of college. That's what we did based on these erroneous decisions. And as he says, it was a toxic confluence of smugness with inflexibility and frankly, poor governance. Yeah, there was a lot of smugness. There was a lot of being told, you're just not smart enough, or you must want people to die, or just listen to us. We know better than you. And that type of frustration, if you think that has gone away, then I think you may have misunderstood why Donald Trump won re-election. You may have completely missed it. The people who are, especially, I always go back to them, but the ladies on The View, I used to watch that show a lot back when Barbara Walters was on, when it first started, because it really was a conversation. Now, it's just a cesspool where they just repeat the same things over and over again and tell each other that they're so right and everyone else is so wrong. But I remember during COVID, the smugness that just came off of everyone, and the ladies of The View just connect, like, They will never understand, I think, why so many Americans voted for someone other than Kamala Harris, and how it may have had to do with some of the seeds that were planted 5 years ago. Those seeds that we were told we were just trying to kill everyone, or just get over it, you know, it's just kindergarten. No, it's not just kindergarten. It's my child's start of an education, okay? And it was the fear that we imposed on these children at that time. It wasn't just about, you know, sitting around with your other five-year-old friends and singing songs. There's so much more to life that we stripped from them. And this representative is absolutely right. And he says, Democrats need to acknowledge that we were wrong as a party on our stance on school closures. It just gets better. I feel, you know, like I said, I am not a Democrat, but I want to send this guy a donation just to be like, thank you for just saying it out loud. Democrats need to acknowledge that we were wrong as a party on our stance on school closures. Do you know how that would go such a long way to telling people, to easing the frustration that a lot of people feel, right? As I said, the ladies of The View, well, they'll never understand. They'll never understand where the frustration comes from and how that frustration grows. It blossoms, you know. I almost think that they just have never taken the time. And a lot of our friends on the left, I think, are in the same position as well. They've never taken the time to understand how that time period did not end just in 2021, right? When things started to get a little bit more normal, when we started to do more things. I remember when the protest happened. Remember, we were still being told that we could not go visit our loved ones in a nursing home because we might, you just can't have that many people gathered together and you might kill your grandmother, right? Next thing I know, I turn on the news and there are protests with thousands of people squished together. And we were basically told, anyways, you're stupid. Like, don't acknowledge that. Look over here. And that frustration, while I may not still be frustrated about that exact thing, that feeling, right, of frustration, oh, that is deep-rooted now. You buried that real deep in the American subconscious. And guess what it has done over the last 5 years? It has grown. It has blossomed. It has matured. And so until you acknowledge that was wrong, it is going to continue to grow. The frustrations are going to continue to grow. And when you have someone like Donald Trump who speaks to those frustrations, well, what'd you think was going to happen? You know, do you really think that people were going to continue to be treated like that and not retaliate in some sort of way? He goes on to say, it's not enough to say we were wrong on this. We also have to have a plan of action for how we're going to remediate it. Well, I would love to know more about that plan. But the first step is just acknowledging the wrong that was done to so many people. That, I think, would go a long way to not just healing the political divide, but to heal this country as a whole. There's a lot of frustration. Just acknowledge where it started from. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Straight Talk with Urip C. Morgan. Next time, we're going to talk more about what's going on at the federal level, including the Department of Education. Is it really going away? And what could that mean for education in America? We're also going to get more into the legislative session here in Maryland. How much more money are we going to have to give up? We'll talk about all of that and more. Make sure to like and subscribe to this video on YouTube at Y Morgan Show, and look for us on Spotify and iTunes shortly.